Welcome to St. Louis On the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The 2012 presidential election cycle enters a new phase tonight in Colorado when President Obama and Mitt Romney face each other in the first of their three debates. 60 million Americans will be watching and listening tonight. This first presidential debate will focus on domestic policy and the economy and will be the subject of today's Talk of the Nation program, which is being broadcast from our studios here at Grand Center. As usual on Wednesdays, NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin will be a key part of that broadcast. He is with us in studio. Ken, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Don.
This is the warm-up for Talk of the Nation, right?
Once the show is over, I could just go home. I could just mail it in.
Exactly. Do so. Hey, I want to talk about the debate, obviously, but let's talk a little bit about Missouri politics to start with. Do you have any sense that there is perhaps even a slight resurgence in Todd Akin's campaign these days?
Well, when you put it that way, I guess I do, in the fact that the evangelical conservatives, which have always been his base, are really behind him. And all the Republicans in the beginning who distanced themselves from Akin because of that legitimate rape comment, many of them have come back. Kit Bond, Roy Blunt, a lot of the Republicans in Missouri as well as in Washington. And while the money is not coming in from like Karl Rove's Crossroads group or the NRSC, there are some other conservative groups who are trying to raise money for him. Right now, McCaskill is outspending him 10 to 1, and that's obviously going to be a big hurdle for him to overcome. But still, there's enthusiasm, and I speak to a lot of Democrats who said, look, I'm not a crazy about Claire McCaskill. I just don't want Todd Akin. And if he can get keep the Democratic turnout low and get his base fired up, it's possible. Do I think it's going to happen? No. That sounds like a John Kerry answer, doesn't it?
A little bit, but certainly the points you make there are very well taken. I happen to notice in the Huffington Post this morning that there is another quote attributed to Akin that was made a couple of years ago, in which he said that abortionists in Missouri have actually been performing abortions on women who are not even pregnant.
Yeah, I've checked. I don't think that's possible. But at least he said that the abortions were being conducted with women and not men. No, look, he said some things. There's no question about how strongly and fervently he believes in this pro-life philosophy. For Todd Akin, though, it's more than just being opposed to abortion. It's really kind of, I hate to use the word fringe, but it's not the mainstream of certainly not the Republican Party. And yet, he's won, you know, if you look at his electoral record, he's won re-election overwhelmingly in a suburban, St. Louis congressional seat. So he has support out there. And again, if he can galvanize the Southwest and the evangelicals and, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I think there's still something of a question mark here in Missouri and with a little time yet to go. He is also running an ad, a much tougher ad than has been the case up to now, with regard to Claire McCaskill's finances and the fact that supposedly, according to his ad, which has been refuted by fact checkers, that that money from the stimulus program has gone directly to her husband.
I know. I saw that too. But she did have, you know, before the talk was about Todd Akin, the talk was, for the longest time, was about Claire McCaskill, Air Claire, and her airplane and, you know, the way she billed the taxpayers for the private airplane. So she does have things that she does have to be concerned about. This is not a walk in the park, and it never was going to be a walk in the park, especially in a state that Mitt Romney seems to have fairly comfortably, and against an opponent, Claire McCaskill, who from the beginning was a big Obama supporter, you know, from the outset in 2008.
Yeah, GOP money, aside from the fact that Todd Akin has not been getting much of it, but GOP money has now left the state because the Republican Party obviously thinks that that it's a safe state for Mitt Romney.
And that's going to hurt Akin. I mean, obviously, the bigger Republican organization, the bigger Republican presence you have in the state, certainly, theoretically at least, should help the Republican candidates down the line. And by pulling out, as the Romney people seem to have done, because they think they have it in hand, that could hurt Akin too.
From your point of view, what other baggage does Claire McCaskill have aside from the Air Claire situation?
Well, and just the fact that she was, you know, Obama from the beginning. She was, you know, a big supporter of the stimulus and health, the health care bill and all those things. And we've seen in Missouri that it's really you know, at least you go statewide. If you get out of St. Louis and Kansas City, it seems to be extremely unpopular. So, again, we knew from the primary, we knew from her tactics in the primary, the Republican primary, that if she had her druthers, Todd Akin would be her candidate, and that's exactly what happened. But, again, it could be closer. I still don't see him winning. I still think the fact that she's going to blanket him on the airwaves by an overwhelmingly, you know, large amount is going to probably hurt his chances. But again, you know, politics can be strange, you know.
I consider you omniscient when it comes to things political.
Karnak, yes.
Right, exactly. What do you know about Governor Jay Nixon?
Well, he seems to be, I mean, you know, you think of how conservative Missouri has been, at least in the last decade. But Jay Nixon seems to be fitting the mold of the kind of Democrats who've been elected in Missouri in the past. They're pro-gun, they're pro-hunting, you know, pro-gun rights. He's not a social liberal. He's not a flaming liberal. He seems to be what Missouri used to produce as their governors. And, you know, he hasn't done anything wrong. So whereas Claire McCaskill has been tied to Obama from the beginning, you can't do that with Jay Nixon. And I think, you know, while this is a conservative state, Nixon has not done anything to upset that apple cart. You know, it's funny. I heard at the Democratic convention, we heard 4 more years and we need Obama now more than ever. And when I think of 4 more years and now more than ever, I think of the other Nixon from 72. It's kind of funny to hear those words coming again for the Democrats.
Yeah. Some political analysts who have been on this program have suggested that Jay Nixon may be well positioned as a potential vice presidential candidate in 2016 because of just the qualities that you mentioned.
Well, you know, for a Democrat to win in a Republican state, and I consider, you know, it's funny, Missouri was never a Republican state. It was always a swing state. Mm-hmm. I mean, it always went with the winner until the last decade, I guess, you know, to be more conservative. But that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't be the strangest thing. Of course, you know, it's hard to predict VP predictions. Mm-hmm. Dick Cheney, Paul Ryan, it's hard to make these predictions. And I do remember, I was just talking about this yesterday to somebody, I do remember Warren Hearns being on Bobby Kennedy's shortlist for vice president, you know, if you go back a million years.
Sure.
But anyway, Nixon, sure, why not, especially considering the fact that he'll probably win handily this year.
Okay, well, let's put that aside for the moment and turn to the big story of the day, which is tonight's presidential debate. Do debates make a difference?
They have in the past. They certainly in a close election, they certainly can. 1976 is a great example. Jimmy Carter had a huge lead coming out of the conventions over incumbent President Gerald Ford, and Ford was gaining. He was rapidly closing the gap. And then, of course, he made the there was no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. That I understand what Ford was trying to say, but it was perceived as a big gaffe, and it seemed like his momentum stopped right there. As it is, he only lost by 2 percentage points. So who knows what, you know, the Nixon pardon, the picking of Bob Dole, anything could have been done it, but the debate didn't help. And 4 years later with Reagan and Carter, that was pretty much an even race. Reagan had those 2 great lines, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, and there you go again. I mean, it sounds so simplistic to lay it onto that, but right, we saw that after that debate, the momentum really went Reagan's way. Now, you can make the case that in 1984, Walter Mondale really won the debates, big over Reagan. Reagan seemed old, it was fumbling. But when you're down 16 points or something, what does it matter? But sometimes it can make a difference. Another more recent example is in 2000. Al Gore had a 5-point lead going into the debates. He left the debates with a 5-point deficit. And a lot of people said it was the likability factor, the fact that you can go bowling with George W. Bush, although I don't know anybody who went bowling with George W. Bush, or you know the Al Gore sigh. I mean, these are little things like that that could really churn enough voters to make a difference.
You mentioned Walter Mondale. The fact that at the convention he said he was going to raise taxes didn't help at all either.
No, that's not a smart thing to say, no.
Let's go back to 1960, the most famous debates. It was generally acknowledged that on television, John Kennedy won the debates, but those who listened on radio thought that Dick Nixon won.
Well, actually, I think that's more of a fable than reality, because the people who said it about the radio, it was a very small sampling. But the point is, John John Kennedy did look presidential. Remember, he was this young senator who had no experience, didn't belong on the same stage as Vice President Richard Nixon, but he showed it in the debate. He was very strong. He was command of the issues. And Nixon looked, he was sweating, he was ill, he didn't prepare the way Kennedy prepared. And if anything, a lot of people left those debates saying, you know, I could see John Kennedy as the next president. And of course, the election was airtight as well. So who knows what made the difference?
Sure. Well, Nixon was suffering from a staph infection
at
the time.
That's right. And of course, that same staff heard him during Watergate. Yes, different staff, of course.
Ba-bum-boom.
Right, exactly.
We'll give you one there. It's hard to believe for those of us who are interested in this whole political process, but it is said that there are an awful lot of people out there who haven't been paying any attention at all during this campaign, and that these debates will be determinative as far as they're concerned.
That's probably good news for the Romney camp because of course, there's a lot of early voting in a lot of states. And as a matter of fact, a bunch of states have already started voting, Ohio in particular, before the debate started. Romney, obviously, if he's trailing in the national polls and the NPR poll that came out this morning showed that it was an 8-point gap, although there was an NBC poll that came out today that showed it a 2-point gap. So whatever, it's within the ballpark. Romney needs to make a last first impression, because especially for the people who have not paid attention to now.
The first debate, the most important one in terms of people making up their mind?
I think so, yes. I think that's usually the largest turnout. Maybe 60 million people will be watching it on NPR. if you think of the other moments, like the Ford gaffe we talked about before, that was in the second debate or the third debate, I think. So if you turn off the TVs after the first debate, you're missing some of the action. Look, I know the media love to focus on gaffes and ticks and embarrassing moments, but you really get a chance to know who these candidates are. And while we've had 4 years of Barack Obama, we've also seen Mitt Romney in 23 debates this year. So, but one-on-one, it's going to be very interesting to watch the dynamic.
That has to be an advantage for Romney, having been through this process 23 times.
Yes, theoretically, but at the same time, we've seen him make the kind of gaffes that, you know, an experienced candidate shouldn't make. And that 47% comment that he made on that leaked Mother Jones video, that has not gone away. There are some things that people say, and then they say, oh, that really hurts, and it lasts for a week. This 47% thing has lasted a long time, and Romney's going to have to do something magic. Or even just maybe even like a checker speech to look into the camera and say, look, this is who I really am.
Yeah. What do you make of the reports that he is practicing zingers for tonight?
Well, you know, I mean, sure. If they're not doing that, that's a mistake. I mean, the great zinger that everybody remembers in the 1988 vice presidential debate with Lloyd Benson saying, "I knew Jack Kennedy. I served with Jack Kennedy, Senator. You know Jack Kennedy." That was prepared because Quayle had been comparing himself to Kennedy several times. He had very little experience, blah, 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 blah. So that was a prepared zinger. And even they say the Reagan thing about there you go again, or I won't make fun of Mondale's youth and inexperience, which was such a great line. I mean, sure. Even Mondale was cracking up. Those had to be prepared.
Oh, by the way, I never did recall a Vice President Benson.
No, that's exactly it. I mean, we talk about how Benson wiped the floor with Quayle in 88, and yet the Bush-Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states. So for all the focus on the VP, I mean, Paul Ryan was supposed to change the whole dynamic. He really hasn't this campaign at all.
That's Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. We're talking politics in advance of tonight's debate in Colorado. We'll be back to continue our conversation in just a moment. We'd love to get you into it. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. If you'd like to send us an email, do so at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL On Air or reach us through Facebook. Back with Ken Rudin in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our conversation with NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin. He is in town today because Talk of the Nation, which comes on, as you all know, at 1 o'clock this afternoon, is being broadcast live here from Grand Center. And Ken is always a big part of that program on Wednesdays. Ken, what should we be looking for tonight? We've talked about the gaffes, but what else should we as viewers be looking for?
Well, You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, have these opinions, for better or worse, about President Obama and Mitt Romney that's been etched in their heads for months, that Romney is an elitist. He only cares about the wealthy. Obama is distant and overconfident. You know, there's a lot of talk. The media have talked a lot about the fact that we don't really know what the next 4 years are going to be like, even though recent polls show that more and more people are being optimistic about the future. Romney has the harder task because if Obama sits back and just rests on his laurels, he should win, because this election is no longer about a referendum on President Obama. It's a referendum about a choice between the two. And Romney's going to have to make the case that what the last 4 years were not George W. Bush's fault. It was Barack Obama's fault. He's going to have to make the case that he asked for 4 years. He didn't do the job. Give me the job, honor, and I'll perform the job.
Some of the analysis, pre-analysis that we hear concerning the president, that he has to not look professorial. He has not to seem aloof and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, we always think of that famous debate he had with Hillary Clinton 4 years ago, where his last line was, "You're likable enough, Hillary," and people like just roll their eyes. But the fact is, both candidates know what their weaknesses are, and they've been working on it not only for months, but the last couple of days. You haven't seen them on the campaign trail because they're in their bunkers, really preparing for tonight. It's crucial.
But it seems that Mitt Romney has spent more time rehearsing than President Obama has.
Well, I mean, of course, President Obama does have a full-time job, and Mitt Romney doesn't. And, of course, there have been a lot of things going on, such as the volatile situation overseas and changing things like that. But, look, the whole job, really, being president, is half running the country and half being the politician in chief. And both Obama and Romney are really working hard at that.
Both sides are playing what is being called the expectations game. They're trying to reduce expectations. Tell us why they would want to do that.
Well, because first of all, you always want if the expectation is that Obama is a better debater than Romney, and I think that's the expectation. Romney doesn't want to go in there with a lot to expecting to win and setting up his supporters with a great showing and then suddenly failing. So he says, well, look, you know, President Obama's a great orator. He's been doing this for so long. He's been in office for so long. He's a great speaker. He knows his stuff. You know, he should do better. And the Obama people are saying, you know, Romney's had 23 debates. He knows how to parry and going back and forth. So neither side wants to get their own side too confident. The same thing happened 4 years ago. Sarah Palin's expectations were so low in her debate with Joe Biden that when it was over, people said, gee, I wonder, maybe did Sarah Palin win? Now, she may not have, but she did so much better than anyone thought that in that regard, it was considered a victory.
Before I go to the phone, speaking of Sarah Palin and Joe Biden, next week the vice presidential debate will be taking place, Paul Ryan and Joe Biden. What do you look for there?
Well, I don't look for Joe Biden to repeat his thing he said yesterday, or that the middle class had a lousy last 4 years. I don't know why he said that, but I guess that's why God created Joe Biden. Paul Ryan has got to be more likable, more sympathetic. He can't be, you know, he's painted as this cruel budget cutter that will do away with seniors and, you know, and the sick and all that. But ultimately, as we said about Benson and Quayle, it ultimately really will be only about Obama versus Romney.
Probably not 60 million people watching that one.
No, but, you know, remember when Geraldine Ferraro said to George H.W. Bush in 1984, he said, don't be condescending. You know, she gave him that, you know, and of course, Mondale Ferraro lost 49 states. So we can talk about the vice presidential debates all we want. Bob Dole in 1976 talking about Democrat wars. I mean, that was just dreadful, but ultimately it's about the president.
Boy, in a sense, I guess those of us who are in public like this on the radio, there's always a danger of saying something that would be misunderstood.
Yeah, I never have that problem.
No, nor do I. But but imagine going through life as these politicians are these days, under this intense scrutiny, every word, every comma, every period being analyzed and scrutinized. It must be awful.
Well, I think Senator Todd Akin learned that lesson too. But you know, the thing is, there are some people say that because you have to be so careful in everything you say, we've lost the spontaneity of politicians. They're so scripted, and they are to some extent. But of course, once they go off script, once they go off, you know, topic, then we, the media, just jump all over them. rightly or wrongly, and they say, you know, why do I even bother turning away from the script if I'm going to be so pilloried for that?
One other question before I go to the phones, and that is the moderator, Jim Lehrer, or any moderator. Does the moderator make a big difference in these exercises?
No, I don't think so, although I do remember when my former boss at ABC News, Hal Bruno, moderated the Admiral Stockdale, Dan Quayle, Al Gore bloodbath or wrestling match, a world wrestling match. He lost control completely. But Jim Lehrer, Candy Crowley, Bob Schieffer, and Martha Raddatz of ABC, who's going to do the vice presidential one, they're really real good pros, and they just have to make sure not to lose control.
Some criticism that there's a lack of diversity in the moderator panels.
Well, of course, you do have women, and you do have Martha Raddatz, and you have Candy Crowley, but of course, I've seen Latinos object that there's never been a Latino, and I think it's fair, and I don't think that's going to be something that's going to it's not going to be. I don't think that those concerns have been clearly addressed and heard, and perhaps 2016 we'll see different cast of characters.
Okay, Ken Rudin, let's go to the phones. We'll invite our listeners to come into the conversation, and also we don't need necessarily to talk just about debates. Other political news is also something we can discuss with Ken. Let's start it with David calling from Bourbon, Missouri. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Ken, when it comes to defenders of the president and possibly the president himself trying to maybe woo the few undecideds that are still out there. I get back to when, I guess it was Mitch McConnell said, you know, our top priority is to make this guy a one-term president, not to solve problems. And of course, along came 2010 and the people, the Republicans that won then, you know, all said amen to that. And of course, everybody's frustrated about the Washington gridlock. So are you with me on that? Don't you think there should be some emphasis on this comment of Mitch McConnell and, you know, the people that agree with him? And also, would you care to make a prediction for the Missouri Senate race? Thank you.
Well, thanks, David. As I said earlier, my prediction is still McCaskill. It could be closer than many people think, but I still think McCaskill wins. And it's not because she's running a great campaign. It's because the Republicans self-imploded with Aiken's comment. As far as the comment that Mitch McConnell made earlier that our goal is to make Obama one-term president, you're absolutely right. To me, that's just not what politics should be all about. But that's what Washington has become. And it's not only on one side. It's not only one side saying things like that. Now, of course, people say, well, of course, it's unequal. Republicans are more or worse than Democrats. That's not the point. The point is we've seen, at least since the Bill Clinton days, that the opposition to Bill Clinton, be it the public at large or the people who blocked his nominees, was pretty intense. And we saw that with George W. Bush, too. The Democrats voted against his judges. Barack Obama voted against extending the debt limit. So, I mean, the gridlock in Washington has gotten worse. The rhetoric has certainly gotten worse. And for whatever you think about the Tea Party, the Tea Party rose and they said, look, we're tired of politics as usual. But since the Tea Party and 2010, I think it's gotten even much worse. So I think, and the problem here is no matter who wins the presidency, and right now if I had to guess, because of looking at all the swing states, it looks like Obama does have a slight lead. If the Republicans keep the House, which I think they will, if the Democrats keep the Senate, which I think they will, what changes? What changes in the next year? What changes in the next 4 years? And I fear that we're going to have four more years of the same.
It would be unwise to think that if Barack Obama wins the election, that anything would change, because they'll be saying, we want to prevent a Democrat from winning in 2016. Same thing.
Well, you know, that's funny because some people love to talk about 2016. And, you know, I'm sure the Hillary Clinton people saying, well, what's better for us if Obama – look, of course, they want the Democrats to win. But after 8 years of the Democrats, one would think that 2016 would be ripe for the Republicans, but not if the Republicans take over everything in 2014 and overreach. So 2016 is a million years from now.
Would you anticipate that Hillary will run?
My gut tells me no, but everything I'm reading says yes. And I always see that, you know, Andrew Cuomo is waiting back for Hillary and Martin O'Malley in Maryland is waiting back for Hillary. But I kind of take her at her word and saying, look, she's been there, done that, and she's had enough, but that may not be good enough for a lot of people.
She also will be 4 years older, and that would put her,
late 60s. Yeah, but I mean, John McCain was 72, Bob Dole was 73. While age is an issue, I think there's no question that Hillary Clinton's numbers, at least as Secretary of State, are just astronomical. And, of course, while she'd be out of the public eye by 2016, or at least out of office by then, we wonder if those numbers will still be the same.
Back to the phones. Licia has been waiting in St. Louis. Licia, go ahead. We're waiting for your comment or question.
Ken, I think you're so adorable. I just have to say that.
Hey, what about the other guy?
Well, I have a special and particular amorous love for you.
Can I tell Licia where I'm staying in St. Louis? No, I can't do that.
I've been dabbling in the real Romney, and thinking about Romney, I'm Democrat. Thinking about Romney, his history and how he thinks, his philosophy on things, it's my notion that if George Romney brought to the table and said, I'm going to run for governor, what do you think I should do, run for as a Republican or a Democrat? They made the decision to become a Republican. If they would have made the decision to become a Democrat, do you think that we would have seen Mitt Romney's picture on the faces among the faces of the presidents?
I'm not sure exactly what you're saying. I know there's always been a long-time question about Mitt Romney's truth. By the way, you said George Romney earlier, which reminds me you may be close to my age. But having said that, there's always been a question about Romney's true philosophy. When he ran for the Senate against Ted Kennedy in 1994, when he ran for governor of Massachusetts in 2002, he was pro-choice. He was pro-stem cell research. And then when he decided to run for president, he shifted on that. So I never thought for a second that Mitt Romney would ever consider being a Democrat, one, because of his father, and two, because I think that his business philosophy. But at the same time, there's always been a question about who is the real Mitt Romney. So, you know, there's no question that Todd Akin, for example, is a staunch conservative. There's no doubt about that, for better or for worse. But the problem Mitt Romney had, and we saw it during the Republican primaries, is that people just can't get their arms around who the real Mitt Romney is. And we've seen, I think you may see that tonight, but for all I know, it could be too late in the minds of many voters.
Thank you so much for the call. Let's bring in Amy calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Amy. You're on the air with Ken Rudin.
Good morning, Don.
Hi.
I'm a longtime listener, so thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And Ken, welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you so much.
I want to ask a question about the House of Representatives. I was watching Nancy Pelosi on the TV, and I suddenly realized that I really should be watching the House. She was very confident and thought that the numbers could move significantly. What do you think?
Well, you know, the fact is the Republicans picked up a net gain of 63 House seats in 2010. That's the most they've picked up, any party's picked up since 1948, and the most the Republicans have picked up since 1928. So there's always a reversal 2 years after such a monumental tsunami like we saw in 2010. But the Democrats still need a net gain of 25 seats to take back the House. And while they'll gain some seats, you know, especially Illinois looks very good for them, California may look good for them, 25 is a lot. No incumbent president has taken 25 seats with him in the House in re-election since Lyndon Johnson in 64. I think it's doable. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think, you know, in some states, the Republicans will pick up some seats as well. It's something to watch. Of course, all the focus has been on the Senate, but the House is crucial. I just don't think the Democrats will pick up the 25. They'll make the gains, though. They'll make some gains, though.
A lot of folks have suggested that this election is a referendum, and that even if the Democrats fall just a little bit short of numbers they need to take full control, that might influence the GOP to play ball a little bit more. Do you see it that way?
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, you could look at it the adverse way and say if Romney loses in November, the conservative wing of the Republican Party, which is really the Republican Party, but the conservative, the Tea Party folks, could say running Romney was a mistake. He was too moderate. He was too establishment. He was too mainstream. Next time, we have to be much more conservative, much more unforgiving, much more confrontational. If you could imagine it being more confrontational than it is now. So, you know, a lot of things could be said after the election of 2012, but a combination after the results, I don't see that happening. I say that with terrible regret.
Is there any information out there with regard to the chances of Tea Party candidates in House elections, for instance? Are they basically going to be reelected? Is there going to be a big shift there or change?
Well, Tea Party, you mean they're all Republicans, of course.
Sure.
Backed by Tea Party folks in 2010. Well, some of them will lose. A lot of these House results in 2010 took place in solidly Democratic districts that the Republicans had no business running. But there was such an antipathy for Obama, for health care, for all that, that a lot of these Republicans won. Now, there'll be a correction in 2012, and some of them will not survive. But for the most part, they will be still around in 2013.
Okay. Let's take one more call before the break. We'll bring in Joe, who is calling from O'Fallon, Missouri. Joe, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Just wanted to make a quick comment. Last election, I was watching some of the old presidential debates on C-SPAN, and it was kind of depressing because back in the 70s and 80s, they were still debating the same issues we're debating today, the economy, social issues, terrorism, our national security. And it seems like we haven't made much progress, and I just wanted to kind of make that comment observation and maybe get your feedback on, you know, how are the substances of the debate, have they changed at all over the last 20, 30 years?
Well, you know, obviously you start with 1960 and Kennedy and Nixon. There were four debates then, by the way, and they were very serious and on all score of issues. But look, what concerns you, what concerns me, what concerns our families and neighborhoods and communities is the economy, is national security. So it shouldn't depress you that these are the same subjects we're talking about over and over. What should depress you is what government's response is to it. It's one thing to say these great things during a debate and have these meaningful soliloquies, but then once they get into office, what changes? I mean, you can make the case, and some progressives have made the case, that on national security and wiretapping and Guantanamo and what's the difference? And then the drone attacks, what's the difference between George W. Bush and Barack Obama? I'm not saying that they're exactly the same, but there are a lot of people say that it doesn't really matter for all the rhetoric, for all the nice, fancy rhetoric you'll hear tonight and in subsequent debates. What does it ultimately matter? And that's disappointing because some people have just given up on the system.
Should they even be called debates?
Well, no. Well, that's a good question. They're not, certainly not Lincoln Douglas, where they just went on forever. And, we have today, of course, everything is short attention span theater that we don't, you know, we can't imagine sitting there. Are they debates? No, it's a presentation. And the fact that they've been preparing, in the last couple of days, weeks, just shows how important of a theatrical thing it is. But they're as close as they can come to debates. You know, I think, look, Mitt Romney probably won the nomination by doing really effective tearing down of his opponents during those debates.
Or put another way, that the opponents were so bad in so many cases that they were forced to drop out.
And that was so bizarre because everybody thought that Romney would be the nominee, and yet there was an anybody but Mitt campaign. If you think of Michelle Bachmann and Herman Cain and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry, I mean, they were all front runners because the Republicans were dying for somebody but not Mitt Romney. And the question is, is the enthusiasm for defeating President Obama going to be sufficient for Romney voters in November?
That's Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. He's our guest in studio today. We have to take a break. We'll do that and come back and take more of your calls. Those who are on the line, please stay with us. We'll take your calls when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation with political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken, before I go to the phones, we have an email here from Brandon who raises an issue that I kind of like. What would be the upside and downside of going to a 6-year single term for president, cutting out years of nonsense campaigns? And first term is always dedicated to getting reelected.
Well, that argument has been made by many people, but at the same time, no longer are they accountable. I mean, you have somebody in office who knows that they don't have to worry about, unless they're recalled, they don't have to worry about the next election, so they could just do whatever they want with no accountability. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. They won't have the reelection and the millions of dollars spent in campaigning.
Or billions, even.
Billions.
Right. To the phones now. Jerry in O'Fallon, Missouri, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Well, good morning. Actually, I was going to expand outside of the realm of the debate and talk about money and politics. And I really kind of, you know, it's gotten to a point now where, as I said to someone the other day, I said, can you imagine, under the premise of fostering democracy, the United States would go to some nation that we are trying to elevate their political status to that, to close to a democracy, and say, well, what you really need to do is allow unlimited funds so the interests that currently have the money and power can exercise the most the most influence over your free elections. It sounds, you know, quite hypocritical that that seems to be the model that we're following, and that's kind of the elephant in the room that I think more and more people have come to recognize, but I think with the passage of Citizens United, or the passage, the judgment, that we've kind of gone past the point of no return.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. I mean, we thought that after the Watergate scandals that there would be some kind of monitoring of the money that goes into politics and we would never make the same mistakes again. I don't have this terrible anger at all the money. I mean, remember 4 years ago, Barack Obama spent or raised $750 million. He outspent McCain 3-1, and nobody then was complaining about all the money in politics. What I don't like is the unaccountability of where the money is coming from. I don't like the fact that somebody could just raise a ton of money and not tell you where it's coming from. That disturbs me. But, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled that money is free speech, and sometimes it's gotten out of control. But I think there should be far more accountability of where this money is coming from.
Just pointing out the last election with President Obama, much of his money, if not most of it, was raised in small amounts via the Internet.
That's absolutely right. I mean, in comparing that to million-dollar checks, it's not the same thing, too.
Was McCain-Feingold, which got into this campaign finance reform, was that working? Was that a process that might have avoided what we're going through now?
Well, yes, and you know, I mean, the caller is exactly right. Citizens United has, Citizens United has almost legitimized what's been going on anyway. The fact is, there has been a lot of corporate money seeping into politics, but now it's out in the open. But there was always big, you know, to use a phrase from the 1970s, big labor was spending big on Democratic candidates as well, but it's just gotten much more out of control.
And it should be pointed out, speaking of big labor is a part of this Citizens United thing, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Corporate and labor money, but of course, it's the corporate money that's really dominated.
Yeah. Debbie in St. Louis wants to get in on this part of the conversation, I believe. Debbie, go ahead. You're on the air with Ken Rudin.
Yeah, this is an extension, I guess, of the previous question. What do you think the influence of all this super PAC money is going to be near the end of the election as they pour money into these swing states? They're going to outspend Obama. How do you think that's going to fall out?
Well, I think they probably will. At the same time, there's a sense of overkill. It seems like, I mean, I live in outside of Washington, D.C., where Virginia is definitely in play, both for the Senate and both for the presidential race, and I am bombarded with commercials nonstop. So I don't think late money coming in by American Crossroads or anybody is going to make that much of a dramatic difference, because we've been bombarded for weeks anyway. So, and I wonder, is there any more time to be bought up anymore? What I noticed, what I've been reading about lately is that, and I didn't realize this at first, but what Obama did 4 years ago and what he's doing this year was very, very clever. The early voting states, he has made a targeted decision to, if Ohio is starting to vote early October 2nd, that's when he'll do a big buy in Ohio. And then once the early voting states are out of the way, then he'll worry about the remainder in November. But following, spending money in those early voting states is a very significant tactical decision.
But when you say, is there any time left to buy, that also could be a strategy, is buy as much time as you can so the other guy can't.
True, but I mean, I'm just wondering if everything is, I mean, I'm, as I said, I've been so bombarded with these ads. Where do you fit them in unless you fit them in 4 o'clock in the morning? I remember there was a guy named Lou Lerman who was running for governor of New York in 1982 against Mario Cuomo. He had so much money. He had bought so much commercial time that some of his commercials ran after the polls had closed because he had no more time to buy.
Ah, money, the name of the game anymore.
That's why I'm in public radio, for the money.
Let's go to Daryl calling from Kirkwood. Daryl, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey, great show, Don and Ken. Welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you so much.
You know, I have friends around the country that continue to ask me, what the heck is wrong with Missouri? You know, Rush Limbaugh's bust in the Capitol, you know, this Todd Akins gaffe, all this. It's just a report, you know, I think their views are that we're all walking around with a piece of wheat sticking out of our mouth and saying it all shucks. And I'd like to know what you think about the I don't want to say opinions, but what's the reputation of the Missouri voter amongst the country?
Well, I mean, I don't certainly the overdramatic caricature you're portraying it, and I know you're just concerned about that. I don't think people think that at all. I think obviously Missouri got a lot of attention because of Todd Akin and some of the comments that and some of the things he said you don't hear from other politicians. But what fascinates me about Missouri, and as we said, and we said this earlier in the show, that for the longest time it went with the winner. I mean, it was a Democratic. It was a Adlai Stevenson. It was, you know, it went with Clinton twice.
It did not go with Adlai Stevenson. It was the only time since 1904 that Missouri wasn't a bellwether state up until recently. It did. I beg your pardon. It did go, but yeah. that was almost considered a favorite son. I beg your pardon.
Exactly. Yeah. It was the only aberration from 1904 to 2004. But I mean, clearly it's more conservative. Clearly, you know, when everybody was gaga over Barack Obama in 2008, Missouri was not. Although Obama only lost by 4,000 votes, so. I think it's pretty much – it always had been a swing state. The only reason you're getting this attention is – or the negative attention is Todd Akin and the what came out of that.
And, of course, Rush Limbaugh is from Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
I know that. Yeah. And so is Bill Emerson, I believe, the late Bill Emerson, former congressman, friend of mine.
Right. We have an email from Andy in Fenton. He writes, I've heard other political analysts argue that Mitt Romney might be accurately viewed as a fine example of the old guard Republican candidate or the final example of the country club Republicans of the recent past. What does Mr. Rudin think of this analysis of Mr. Romney and the Republican Party in general? Who might be the Republican candidates of the future, in the opinion of Mr. Rudin?
Well, that has been the caricature and the description often heard about Mitt Romney, that he's country club, he's elitist, he's rich, and he certainly is rich. But he's not. But I don't know what the establishment means anymore. If you heard some of the rhetoric coming out of the Republican debates, I mean, he was pretty strongly anti-immigrant, or at least certainly anti-illegal immigrant. Let me rephrase that. Anti-illegal immigrant. And some of his – but I think some of the rhetoric got so heated that he basically wrote off everything that McCain and Bush and the Chamber of Commerce and Republicans have been doing for years, writing off the most – the largest growing segment of the American electorate, the Latino population. And so I don't know – you know, Jeb Bush to me is a. I know Bush is still a four-letter word that a lot of people don't want to talk about. But he seems to understand what the future of the country is, what the future demographics are, and while he's still truly conservative, he says, "Look, you have to be realistic here. You can't say no to everything. You have to reach across lines, and you have to realize there's a bunch of people in this country who need Republican support. So that could be the future of the Republican Party, but they may not be that smart.
It just couldn't possibly run this time.
No. You couldn't do a Bush 4 years later. Exactly not.
Yeah, right. By the way, another Facebook comment here that you'll enjoy. I absolutely love Ken Rudin. I love that he never lets callers or guests get away with lazy thinking and is never afraid to call them out on it. He is one of NPR's treasures for sure.
Okay, I'm going to tell this person where I'm staying in St. Louis, along with Alicia. I think the three of us will. No. Thank you very much. That's very kind.
Yeah, I'd like to, in the time we have left, talk about some other things, and we can take more calls, by the way, at 382-8255. There's been a lot of talk about the, quote, alleged skewing of polls this time around. What are your thoughts about that? Can polls be manipulated?
Well, they can be. You can always ask a question in a certain way. You can always say, given this fact about Obama or given this fact about Romney, how do you feel and how you phrase it? I do know that, and I know I'm not one of these the media is liberal, the media are liberal conspiracy theorists. But I do know that in the NPR poll that was released this morning that had the president up by 8 points, there was 7% more Democrats polled than Republicans. So I don't think that's a deliberate bias, but sometimes those things can affect the results of a poll. Because at the same day, the NBC Wall Street Journal Marist poll had it within 2 points. So It depends on who's being asked.
They have been all over the place. They have no question about it.
But Romney has not had the lead, and that's significant. Even in the especially in the swing states, that's the most concerning thing. If I were Mitt Romney,
and the trending has remained pretty much the same. Although,
well, there's a sense that Romney has closed the gap somewhat, certainly since the Democratic convention, and that's another reason why tonight is so important. Even though it may not determine the winner, it is crucial.
What do you make of the gender gap?
Well, you know, it's been around for a long time. We certainly saw that since 1980 with Reagan and Carter. It got, you know, even though Reagan won female votes in 1984 against Mondale, it was much more narrow than it was with the men. But it's pretty significant. The fact that the Democrats have said over and over again about the Republican, quote, war on women, that has taken hold. And then when you have a Todd Akin comment, you know, a lot of women saying, wait, I still need to have reproductive freedom. I still have to have, you know, my rights. Now, in the old days, you'd think that's what Republican Party would stand for. It's, you know, individual rights and individual liberties. Now, of course, there are a lot of women who are pro-life and, you know, anti-abortion and things like that, and that's fine. But polls will show you that the reason Obama does have this lead is because a far larger segment of women are voting Democratic.
And Hispanics and blacks.
Well, the question about Hispanics, and yes, and I think the Republicans, you know, George Bush got 40% of Hispanic vote in 2004, and that was, and he was very strong with Latinos in Texas. But you know, the rhetoric we saw coming out of the debates were pretty much inflammatory. The arguments about the Dream Act were inflammatory. The question is turnout, and the question is enthusiasm, and that's you know. So there are some indications that the Latino turnout in 2012, the turnout among young voters, may not be the same as 2008, and that should be a concern for the Obama camp.
Time for another call. Let's bring in Owen calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Owen.
Hi. I'm a political moderate, and I really rely on each party doing a lot of cooperation, actually making some concessions with each other, doing a lot of reaching across the aisle. And I just see less and less and less of that as time goes on. But as a moderate, I don't want to swallow the entire platform of each party. I want to find some middle ground. What would have to happen to make the political climate more moderate and do a little bit more of this fostering of, you know, across the aisle ship? What could an individual do to actually make that happen more often in the political climate?
Well, I don't know what an individual could do, but my gut tells me that it's not going to happen because, especially in the outgrowth of cable television, both Fox News on the right and MSNBC on the left, they preach to the converted. They tell you what they skew the news the way they want to do it, and they know there's an audience for it. So, and also redistricting has not helped either. If I now have a 95% Republican district or a 95% Democratic district, why do I need to compromise if I know that I'm going to win, you know, pretty handily in my district? So between cable TV and redistricting, it seems like there's less reason for people to compromise because they know they'll be rewarded back home. But the process suffers, the country suffers, and the future suffers. And I agree with you. It's I don't know what you can do or what I can do, but You know, we've seen that any kind of time where a Democrat or Republican, they start to talk about cooperation with the other side, they get challenged in the primaries. We saw that with the Tea Party challenges. We saw that with Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, challenged by the left. If you talk about working with the other side, that's heresy, and you'll pay for it in the primary.
Time is really getting away from us. Only a minute and a half. I won't take the call, but Dennis in Overland is asking about the big elephant in the room. An October surprise. He's pointing specifically toward Israel-Iran. Could change everything.
Well, Netanyahu's made it pretty clear that he's not going to do anything before the election. And, of course, it's harder and harder to have an October surprise when a lot of people are voting earlier and earlier. But that is probably the one thing people are kind of braced for. But Netanyahu seemed to indicate at his UN speech that nothing will happen until 2013.
And the early voting has already started. It started yesterday, I believe, in 34 states.
Is that correct? It started in Iowa in September. And, again, that's not great news for Mitt Romney, but probably the people who vote early, the people whose minds have been made up and will not change.
And in the less than a minute we have left, one of the questions that we can't take the phone call about is the makeup of the debate audience tonight. It's certainly not going to be many young people. I understand students at the college are minimal in the audience.
Well, I don't know who, the makeup of the audience, but I do know that the cheering and the whooping and the hollering is not permitted, and I think Jim Lehrer will be very insistent on that. And that's good, too, because I don't want this to be a sports rally, even though we are kind of making it like a sports event.
Well, is there a final thought about all of this, Ken, that you'd like to leave us with?
I would think that, you know, Yankees Cardinals World Series, that would be great.
Well, we've got to get through Friday in Atlanta.
And so we have to get through Baltimore, right?
Yeah. Well, after tonight's debate, maybe we can spend a little more time paying attention to some of the sports things going on. Ken, thank you so much for being with us today. A great pleasure to chat with you, and I hope you have a wonderful show this afternoon. You and Neil, I'm sure you will.
Thank you so much.
All righty. That's Ken Rudin. Thank you again. A reminder, by the way, that you can find more information about the current election cycle at beyondnovember.org. That's a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, more politics. We'll discuss the pros and cons of term limits for state legislators. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.